Okay, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Okay, for those of you who got the secret decoder ring bat signal, to wit, my notices on Facebook and Twitter and Sparky's notices on Skype and his posting to the Horn Facebook group and postings in the chat room, you may very well be listening to the replacement stream. And yes, this program is live. This is the Horn for the 12th day of May, 2017, the 12th day of May, a Friday. Friday on the front porch, on the Horn. Okie doke. We have a live stream this evening, courtesy of Brother Deacon Asa, who worked...
You don't know how much color matters.
Yeah, don't... Auto-run audio, black, not poll, frazzle-lack. Anyway, we're testing this new streaming site out that Brother Deacon Asa has kindly provided us. For those of you listening via the podcast, until further notice, that is, until the White Rose Society server is no longer deader than Pharaoh's cat, and Ben Birch is busting his hump to try to get that back up and running. It is slow sledding through thick mud. Let's push back. We'll be using this stream. And hopefully there won't be a whole bunch of buffering. One of the issues, as far as the buffering is concerned, I would have to explain and go way too far in the weeds to make this make any sense, but I am beginning to think that some of the buffering may be generating on the streaming PC end of things, but that's just where it is and what it is. Asa said, I hope it'll settle. I do too. Asa went to the extreme trouble of setting up a website and setting up a player and setting up a stream server so that we could get this out after 2 days off air. So, I mean, this is beyond toasters or cowbells. This is a heroic effort on Asa's part, and I thank him very, very kindly. So we're live, and it is Friday on the front porch, and hopefully, assuming everything remains stable and works and whatnot, we will fire up the extraordinary ordinary roundtable of the Horn Malloy Skype chat group here in about 55 minutes and see what's on folks' mind. In the meantime, if you would like to participate in the live, real-time, multimedia, madcap, wacky, zany extravaganza that is the Horn chat room, well, go over to headonradionetwork.com and click on chat room and pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and you will be immediately met and greeted by the likes of Jug of Punch and Labor Man and Silent R. Lamar and Ralphs and Squeaky and Steve from Georgia Stan and V.T. Blom and of course, moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has folded space this evening to become Man Cave. Yes, must be nicer in Northern California than it is here, because here it is miserable, cold, and rainy, and it's apparently going to be is going to be that way for a while. Now, how to, for those of you who are listening later, if you're already listening, you don't need to know this. I mean, it goes without saying. But for those of you who are listening to podcasts and so forth and want to be able to listen live at some other point in time, until further notice, the stream, the replacement stream is at www.headon.live. There is an embedded player there that works on Apple iPhone devices. It works on Android devices. It works on various and sundry tablets. It works on PCs. It works on desktops. It works on laptops. It works. TuneIn, Stitcher, and so forth will not be useful until we get back, until the White Rose server stops being deader than Pharaoh's cat. Les says, I hear you on Asa's link in Samuel L. Jackson's voice. Good motherfucking job, Asa. I don't do a Samuel L. Jackson, so, yeah, right. But the intent is there. Okay, so that's all taken care of. And remember, www.headon.live. Maybe just, you know, jot it down somewhere until I tell you that the White Rose server's back up and running. Now, issue number two, Podbean. You know, and there are multiple different ways to get the stream or the podcast, I should say. Podbean is one of them. Podbean.com. Another one is simply iTunes through the good offices of Thomas over at FYINation.com. Thank you, Thomas. But Podbean has had some issues, and it wasn't updating properly. Well, I found out last night that if you will please, if you're using the Podbean app, if you will kindly please delete it and then go to either the App Store on Apple or the Google Play Store, you know, wherever it is you go for your apps, and download the new version, everything should be hunky-dory. Okay? So that'll take care of that. All right, now. I'm trying to just clear up the technical goblolly before we jump into the meat of the program. Let's see, the usual applies as regards Friday on the Front Porch. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. I think I left that part out. See, that's what happens when you host a program and you're not absolutely eaten alive with your own ego. You forgot to tell people who you are. So, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. If you've never participated in Friday on the Front Porch before, and you would like to, it is very easily done. On Skype, you send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, all one word, and say something about the horn or Friday on the Front Porch or FOTFP, anything to let him know that you are not a Nigerian heiress trying to reclaim your dead husband's millions. Okay? Good. He will then show you the breadcrumb trail and show you which quadrant of the sky to look toward. To see the Bob signal flashing off the clouds. And I don't know, maybe even off of the moon, depending on where you. Who knows? And you'll be into Friday on the Front Porch. If you absolutely need a telephone connection, that's what the stress line is for. The stress line, of course, is 304-663-4676, named, of course, after the inimitable Bill Mr. Stress Miller, who. Well, it just seemed like the right thing to do when to name it after him. Let's see. This is, of course, a listener-supported program. It is a there's no advertisement. There are no bills. There is no charge for access. And that means that whatever you want to do is up to you. You can listen for free. You can subscribe, become a subscriber at $10 a month, or 20 or 40, or hey, Mr. Soros, we know you enjoy the program. It's about damn time you put some money into the little box there and click the little box that says make this a recurring monthly donation. Yeah, 10 grand would be great. Four would even help. Four would do it. So there's that. I have big thanks, big thanks to send out to Frank, Fab. We would be in a world of hurt without him, and without the overnight subscription crew, and without Andy and Olivia. And thank you to Laurel as well. Thank you one and all for chipping in, as well as many others. Because, and I want to get to talking about, I want to get to talking stories. I want to get it, but the program is what it is. And because there are no ads, and because you are the reason the program is on the air, I try to share this information, and I want to thank people personally when they help keep the program on the air, because it turned out that May started nicely. Agnes and I had a lovely 24th anniversary, and I wasn't on the air that Monday, and then we got and then last week everything went to shit. And what it boils down to, oh, let me do this real quick. So when the Horn family vehicle decided to have massive problems last week, the bottom line is it ate up the vast majority of the fundraising we had in May. And y'all have, and last night Frank made up a chunk of that to make it not be quite so desperate as it otherwise would be. So that leads me to note that, yes, the regular Horn main page contribute tab works fine. Head on RadioNetwork.com, the contribute tab. It's the PayPal interface. If you want to become a subscriber, check the little box and move on and just do what you get. If you just want to make a one-off, that's cool too. And so that's where we stand. I'm not going to put a money amount beyond. I mean, we need to raise the usual $200 that we raise, but we're still we're catching up with. I mean, and look, I mean, we all have these problems. I would dare say that. I'm not like other radio hosts. Nobody's writing a check here. Nobody's drawing a salary. And so when things like the car going south come along, well, it is what it is. So it would be great to raise the regular $200 this evening. If we raise more, that's great too. Because there are a bunch of bills that got put on the back burner because, well, the car had to be fixed. Brakes, rotors, calipers, new tires all the way around, and a horse gagging week of car rentals. So that's how that works. And I have good news. There's $100 worth of challenges on the table this evening. Thanks very kindly to our buddy Tom in the Bay Area, who let me know that he was making a $50 challenge, and our buddy Dr. John, who notified me of the same. Tom said, let's call it a pickup truck challenge. I hope this will help recover from that. Tom says, I had to rent a pickup truck about 15 years ago just for a few hours and less than 30 miles to deliver part of a large job for it to a boat. I was stunned by the cost. Lost my ass on that job. Hang in there. Hope you're back on the air. Well, this was yesterday. I hope you're back on the air today. I wasn't. But we are now. The Horn Family Community Congregation is together again. So thank you, Tom, and thank you, Dr. John. So your 5 becomes 10, your 10, 20, 20, 40, etc. Up to $100, which would knock down a whole bunch of fundraising this evening. And we'll try to get it to go as far and as hard as we can go. And thank you again to Tom and to Dr. John, to Laurel, to Andy and Olivia. Thank you to Randy. Thank you to Frank. Thank you ever so kindly, because we would be in a horrible, horrible fix without you. And thanks very much to our monthly subscribers. This is how we keep it going. I don't have any PAC scams going to try to separate people from their political donor dollars on the promise of delivering the undeliverable. No, we just have this. We have our little community. Let's see here. Note coming from Steve in New York. Does this sound weird? I'm glad to hear your voice. By the way, sitting at my local bar, working on my laptop, drinking good beer, eating some nachos, and listening to Friday on the Front Porch. I really do love you all. Thank you, Steve. Thank you very kindly. The community, you know, the community worries and looks out for itself and each other. It really is special. All right, then. So where do we pick this up? When last we spoke, the director of the FBI had been sacked. And it looked dirty as hell. And that was just with the ordinary garden variety bullshit that the Trump administration, I'm sorry, Gene, the Trump regime was putting out. Naturally, it got worse. Of course, it got worse. It kind of has to get worse, doesn't it? And there was bizarre stuff along the way that didn't even have anything to do with the Comey firing. The crazy stuff. Things that, and we've talked about this before, but anybody who has ever dealt with dementia, Alzheimer's, anybody who's ever been around people whose brains have been eaten by spirochetes. Well, you know that the problem is that there are moments of lucidity, and then there are moments of just not home. And that's where we kind of are with Comrade Kumquat. one minute he sounds sort of, kind of, not really, but, you know, maybe a little bit sane. And the next minute he's talking about Frederick Douglass. Or another minute he's talking about why no one but him ever wondered why the Civil War happened. Or why it couldn't be avoided. And then the latest one, from an interview, in which he was, God damn, he's like a 4-year-old who comes home with a piece of paper that he's scrawled on with brown and black crayons, and thinks he's Pablo freaking Picasso. But the latest thing is that Tangerine Tiberius has asked if anybody knows what it means economically to prime the pump. Now, priming the pump, as an economic metaphor, goes back a ways. It's a Keynesian term. What the Roosevelt administration was trying to do during the Depression was to prime the pump, use government spending to stimulate economic growth. Right. So it's been around a while. And it's something that you do when the economy's in trouble. Well, the economy isn't in trouble right now. But Trump told his interviewer, I just came up with that the other day, prime the pump. Do you know what that means, prime the pump? I'm guessing it means to prime the pump. And it goes back in time, of course, to the days of, you know, manual pumps that you had to prime in order to get them to pump liquids. But in what is left of his brain that has not been hollowed out by the spirochetes, Marcus Aurelius has decided that he is the great mind that has invented that, or coined that political term. Jumpin' Jehoshaphat. But it gets worse. Oh, wait a second. It gets worse. And I say worse because, okay, so it's an economic term, no harm, no foul. What happens when he decides to promote himself to Commodore of the Ocean Seas? Yes. What happens then? I'm speaking in particular about, and this is another one, is there anybody paying attention to public relations in the White House right now? I mean, granted, when last we spoke, he hadn't been caught yet, but yes, Sean Spicer was found by the White House press corps hiding in the bushes at the White House, trying to avoid having to go out and lie some more. When either the Post or the Times published that he was found hiding in the bushes, Sean Spicer then objected grievously. And so I forget if it was the Post or the Times, I don't remember, were forced to change it from hiding in the bushes to hiding among the bushes. I mean, there was old George H.W., and there was Babs, you know, love child of the Quaker Oats man. No, different bushes. A shrubbery. Yes. With a little two-level effect, a little path running through. Yes. Ni. Clarity suggesting, no. Sean was vaping it legal in D.C. It's not legal on the federal property there, and you wouldn't want to, and then there's the stuff we got to talk about with the Attorney General of the new United States of Confederacy America, Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions the Hood, who has determined to bring back the failed, lost, we got whipped war on drugs. That too. But they had to change it, really. Sean Spicy is down to arguing with a major news media outlet over prepositions. Because prepositions matter, my friend. This is almost too much to take into account. This is too much to comprehend. And while, you know, I'm not a member of any 12-step program. It's just that with my gut being the way it is, for me, to drink is to die. And I can't tell you what the last 3 days have done to my ongoing non-consumption of anything mind-altering. I mean, I'm down to one vice, people. One vice. And it's not even the kind of vice that makes you feel particularly good. It's just addiction maintenance. And I would like so badly to be able to escape from this madness that I can barely express how badly I would like to. But instead, I just start out early in the morning and I go all day long. And I just stare in wide-eyed amazement at the unfolding horror of it all. I know, Bob. Get off the cross. We need the wood. But it's getting kind of stunning. And since Sean Spicer had to go out and play Navy because he's got a sideline Naval Reserve gig over at the Pentagon, I guess lying for the Navy like he lies for the president. They had to bring in the B team, namely Sarah Huckabee Sanders. And they brought her on to Morning Joe yesterday, where she lied like a rug. Holy be Jesus. Too much. They asked her about the decision to fire Comey, and she simply responded, well, the president was just following orders from Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein and Attorney General Sessions. And it was so transparently false as to be pitiable. And then Trump started giving interviews. Now, I've said all along that Rosenstein was involved not because he's Deputy Attorney General or supposedly the man to whom the director of the FBI answers directly, but because of the Trump-Russia investigation. Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions the Hood is supposedly conflicted out of that entire investigation because he, Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions the Hood, is up to his white forehead in the Trump-Russia affair. Because he lied to the Senate of the United States about having met when he was a surrogate, a member of the Trump campaign, with the Russian ambassador, Sergei Kislyak. And so you have to have Rosenstein in there to fire Comey over the Trump-Russia investigation. But wait, there's more. With this bunch, everything's a goddamn Ginsu commercial. Because, like I said, then the interview started. There was a Time Magazine interview, and then there was a an interview with Lester Holt of NBC, which will go down in history, I suspect, as one of the most bizarre and brazenly prevaricative presidential interviews in the history of the Republic. Too weird for words.
Well, Director Comey said he called and wanted to have dinner with me, and I said, okay, let's have dinner. And then he came over and he said, please, can I keep my job? And I said, well, Jim, we'll think about it.
Okay. He's got several years left on a 10-year appointment. He doesn't have to go and kiss the presidential ring when a new president comes in, because one of the understandings is that the president does not work with the FBI unless there are very, very good reasons, like there were when, say, Bill Clinton sacked William S. Sessions, who it turned out was just a walking ball of corruption. But to just fire the FBI director for the all of it, nah, it's kind of undone. And it's so undone that the Nixon Library even got in on the fun and tweeted, even Richard Nixon never fired the FBI director. Whoa.
And he said, and you know, he told me, I asked him, am I under investigation? And he said, no, you're not.
Now, if he had actually done that, that would be worth firing him over. Or, you know, a Senate panel or a House panel demanding resignation for incredibly unethical conduct. But better. As I sat there, engaging in a dirty little morning habit of watching squinting the meat and discovering a new brand of yogurt, which, here, it's an unpaid product placement, and they wouldn't pay for it. So, you know, all things Norse and all things Viking are terribly, terribly in vogue and in fashion right now, so I suppose it's no surprise to find out that there is an Icelandic-style yogurt in New York State somewhere, and they produce this product called Siggy's. Siggy's? I'm a victim of marketing. I've tried... I mean, come on. Just a sec. I mean, I loaded up on some manager's special Oikos peach, which I happen to like. But Siggy's was about 60 cents more per container, and it was all, it's a very plain white container with a strippable paper label and a number 5 plastic recyclable cup, and man, you know, really working toward the sustainable thing there. And it's sort of a scant, the plain white carton is sort of, it has that sort of Scandinavian IKEA kind of design to it. And they talk about how it's just slightly sweet and sweetened either with cane juice or agave nectar. Well, what that turns out to mean is that it's more sour than sour cream. And is so sour that it would put a pickle barrel to shame. And it's really, really thick, and you could barely taste the strawberry either, for that matter. So that's what I was doing while I was watching this morning, and being overwhelmed by this sense that the meat puppet was lecturing other media outlets on how they needed to just do their jobs and stop engaging in the politics porn, her phrase, politics porn, that's involved with inviting, say, Kellyanne Conway on to the program, and she directed herself specifically to the fine folks over at CNN. And I couldn't help thinking that maybe Joe was glad, you know, squint, that he was in Washington, D.C. that day, and that since everybody was off screen, they were kind of rolling their chairs back a little bit, just in case a giant bolt of lightning came down out of the sky and just the meat puppet there for the raging hypocrisy of what she was saying. Because, you see, Squint and the meat puppet still owe the entire nation, the entire body politic, a giant, giant, humongous, universal-sized mea maxima culpa for helping Trump get elected in the first place. Just as a blast from your past, maybe here later you'll want to go and check out the post at Mediaite. If you just search Mediaite, Mika, no hard questions, you'll get that open mic audio that Harry Shearer somehow got hold of that shows Joe and Mika fawning obsequiously over the Clementine Caligula. So, no, sorry, that rang a little hollow. But anyway, that's going on, and the yogurt sucked. And then little Willie Geist. Little Willie won't go home. You can't push Willie round. Willie won't go. Try telling everybody, but, well, no. Little Willie won't go. Oh, the mind of a DJ. God damn, it's horrible. But then he reads the tweet. One suspects that the President of the United States was once again twooping. The act of, you know, sitting on the throne in the little president's room while using the Twitter machine. And he twooped the following.
James Comey better hope that, before he starts leaking to the press, James Comey better hope there weren't any tapes of our conversation.
At which point you kind of step back and go, now this is, I mean, you know, Hunter Thompson said when the going gets weird, the weird turn pro. This is pro. I mean, Richard Nixon himself, that pustulent bag of corruption and evil, never engaged in direct witness intimidation. And that's exactly what the President of the United States did this morning. It is arguably, I mean, because it's hard not to see a situation where James Comey will now be a witness of some sort in some kind of an investigation. Because Comey says, no, he didn't ask for his job. And yes, Trump asked him about whether he was under investigation. And Trump asked him, would he be loyal to the president? And Comey kind of had to explain to him, that's not the FBI director's job. The FBI director's job is to be honest and open and above board, incorruptible, and utterly, absolutely, unqualifiedly, decidedly, determinedly independent of influence from the executive branch. So then the nation, such part of the nation as was actually paying attention to this stuff, had to ask itself, the hell did that mean anyway? Because either Trump was saying that he taped the conversation, or that he thought Comey did. And by implying that he, Trump, had taped the conversation, he was attempting to intimidate Comey into retracting in his accounts of what had gone on. And you know what? It wasn't a leak.
Before he starts leaking to the press, it wasn't a leak.
It's kind of like how Senator Sorghums from Louisiana there got laughed at this week. Former DNI director Clapper had to explain to him that giving information to the press that wasn't classified isn't leaking. But the real cherry on top of the great big steaming pile of ordure was the fact that Trump took everything that had been said by Sarah Huckabee, by Sean Spicer, by anybody associated with this whole stinking process, and turned them into liars. To say that he chucked them under the bus is entirely too weak.
No, I'd already decided to fire Comey. I was going to fire him one way or the other.
And that may be true, but that was not the story that the White House put out. Oh, and I have been, I actually started to talk about something else. Remember me mentioning that the president or the spirochetes that have hollowed out his brain have decided that he is a commodore of the ocean seas? Yeah. Well, that had to do with the Time interview. And when he was interviewed by Time magazine, how do you even describe this stuff? He just went wandering off and decides to talk about the catapults that are used on board aircraft carriers. Now, for years and years and years, those catapults were steam catapults. They gave the necessary extra boost to an aircraft to throw it up into the air so that it could then get, because, you know, there's just not a hell of a lot of flight deck on an aircraft carrier, even the great big goddamn big ones we have now. And so he's desperate to show how smart him is.
Oh, he's a smart boy. Donnie's such a smart boy. Oh, he's so smart.
You can almost, he's so smart. Oh, who's mama smart boy? You can almost hear Mother Trump. Yeah.
You know, the catapult is quite important. So I said, what is this?
Sir, this is our digital catapult system.
He said, well, we're going to this because we wanted to keep up with modern technology. I said, you don't use steam anymore for catapult?
No, sir.
I said, how's it working?
Sir, not good, not good. Doesn't have the power. You know, the steam is just brutal. You see that sucker going and steam's going all over the place. There's planes thrown in the air. Planes thrown in the air. Flies with beaks.
It sounded bad to me. Digital. They have digital. What is digital? And it's very complicated. You have to be Albert Einstein to figure it out. And I said, and now they want to buy more aircraft carriers. I said, what systems are you going to be?
Sir, we're staying with digital.
I said, no, you're not. You're going to goddamn steam. The digital costs hundreds of millions of dollars more money, and it's no good. Holy fuck! Yeah, we're one spirochete away from having a navy composed of triremes.
I like sailboats. I like to see the sails, the tall sails. Steel ships are no good.
Oh! And you know,
what is this? What is this digital?
I presume, though I do not know, I presume that a digital catapult is a catapult that had, I mean, with the steam catapult, you pretty much got whatever force the steam is there applying. I'm presuming that a digital catapult, such as has been designed for the next generation of aircraft carriers, is actually a catapult that doesn't operate on steam, and that probably has more sophisticated control of the amount of force that's going to be necessary to launch a given aircraft. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But here's a guy who did everything in his power and whose father leveraged whatever power he had during the Vietnam conflict to keep his idiot son out of the United States military. Hell, if he'd gone for his physical, he probably would have failed. Or else it would have been that George Jetson thing, put pegs in holes, put pegs in holes. And the robot jams the square peg into the round hole, and the officer material. No, it's some big lummox. It's not a robot. It's a lummox. It's a big, big dumb jock guy. Officer material. Officer material. I mean, the nearest experience that Donald Trump has to anything military is actually having to wake up to a recording of Reveille when he went to military school because his parents couldn't stand to have him at home. Jesus! And yet, I don't know if you saw the news breaking this afternoon. Rod Rosenstein, who is reported to have threatened to quit if the White House did not correct its errors about who insisted that Comey be fired. Rod Rosenstein has apparently decided to be a good soldier and a loyal Trumpanzee, because earlier today, I got a note via Twitter. From the angry Indian. And it did not inspire confidence. Not angry, but the story. The story coming from Reuters, based on reporting by CNN.
Fake news.
Deputy Attorney General sees no need for Russia probe special prosecutor. Deputy U.S. Attorney General Rod Rosenstein does not see a need at this time for a special prosecutor to investigate allegations Russia meddled in the U.S. election and possible collusion between Russian officials and the Trump campaign, CNN reported Friday, citing unnamed sources. Well, if you're willing to take that as truth, then that certainly tells you a lot about Rosenstein. And it tells you where his sympathies and loyalties lie. And once again gives us cause for alarum. A lot of alarum. Jesus. I mean, am I caught up? There's so damn much stuff out there. That I'm not sure if I am. I trust during the Friday on the phone, during the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, you'll tell me if I missed anything. Oh, yeah, Jeff Sessions. Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III, who has declared anew the war on drugs. It didn't work. It never worked. It was vile. It was nasty. It was undeniably racist as hell. And therefore, Attorney General of the Confederate States, the United States of America, Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III, has declared that he is informing U.S. attorneys to go for maximum sentences on low-level drug offenses. And in the process, prattled on about how we have got to stop the scourge of this crime wave, and we've got to make certain. We've got to make certain that our U.S. attorneys are no longer handcuffed by the policies of that Negro who was in our White House. No, he didn't say that exactly, but that's what my ears heard while his gooey corn pone encrusted lips were flapping away. So I guess kind of watch your ass. And legal weed, medical marijuana won't mean a tinker's damn to a Jeff Sessions Department of Justice. because see, we've got a new administration now, and they've got beds to fill in the for-profit prison complex. And so we'll be back to mandatory minimums, three strikes laws, and the unequal administration of justice. If you can find any portion of this that you do not find to be utterly terrifying, I'd kind of like to know about it. Do we get a break this weekend? Is dumbass going and playing golf somewhere? And one of the other more stunning statements of idiocy that I've heard, it seems that even Ivanka and Jared can't control him now. They never did. That's not why they were there. That was not the purpose. This is all just one great big scam. And oh, by the way, today we have a letter from Trump's lawyer saying, gosh, there's no connection with Russia. No, honest Pete, we swear. Of course, it's from the same law firm that was named Russian Law Firm of the Year last year. So I guess the FBI can just fold its tents and be on its merry way. Nothing to see here. Profile in chicken shit. Paul Ryan. Sandra shared this with me via Twitter. Opened his mouth and made some noises today. About about the Russia investigation. He was speaking in Delavan, Wisconsin. I've decided I'm not going to comment on the tweets of the day or the hour. Because unless you're on our side of the political spectrum, you kind of can't comment on the tweets of the day or the hour because you wind up having to defend them. And in so doing, you wind up trying to defend the indefensible. I've decided I'm not going to comment on the tweets of the day or the hour. I haven't seen them all, to be candid with you. I'm sure some of you want to ask this question as well. No one is disputing the fact that the president has the right to hire or fire the FBI, an FBI director. He made that decision. It's been made. I think what's important now is that there is a qualified and capable person that people have confidence in to take over the FBI. I think it's also important that the professionals there keep doing their jobs. They do their jobs thoroughly. They do it objectively. They go where the facts may lead. And just so you know, that is exactly what our congressional investigators are going to do as well, is doing their investigations. Nothing's changed before, during, or after this event. So, in other words, the strategy remains in operation over in the House of Representatives to do abso-goddamn-lutely nothing as long as every last one of their conservative right-wing wet dreams continues to come true. Because while the for-profit media was out there blathering about how, you know, this Republican and that Republican in the Senate, you know, Richard Burr, Lindsey Graham, were showing some spine and being troubled, I tell you, troubled by Trump's conduct. It doesn't matter a hill of beans. Because the Senate cannot initiate proceedings impeachment proceedings against the President of the United States. If the Senate should, by some miracle, and I am less impressed with the courage of Richard Burr or Lindsey Graham, hold me, John. If they should happen to actually develop evidence that shows that the absolute worst that we believe about Trump is actually true, they can't do a goddamn thing with it. Only the House can. And Paul Ryan has signaled abundantly that the House ain't gonna do diddly. I know. Bob Kincaid, little ray of sunshine. I know. So it's time for me to shut up, and it's time for us to fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. But before we do that, I just wanted to share a little something with you, because I've got a clip here of the interview with Trump and Lester Holt.
Captain, did you ever turn your ship upside down in a vain search for a key that did not exist?
I don't know what lies have been sworn to in this court, but I'd like to set you straight on this matter right here and now. A key definitely did exist.
May it please the court, the witness is understandably agitated by this ordeal, and I request a recess to give him a brief
space. I don't want a recess. I'll answer all questions right here and now.
Did you conduct such a search?
Yes, I did. As usual, my disloyal officers failed me, and the key couldn't be found.
As a matter of actual fact, wasn't this whole fuss over a quart of strawberries?
The pilfering of food in large amounts or small is one of the most serious occurrences on board ship.
Yes, but didn't you learn the mess boys had eaten the strawberries and that you were conducting a search for an imaginary key?
I repeat, the key was not imaginary. And I don't know anything about mess boys eating strawberries.
Captain, have you no recollection of a conversation with an Ensign Harding just prior to his leaving the Kane?
What about it?
Well, didn't Ensign Harding tell you that the mess boys ate the strawberries?
All that I remember is that he was very grateful for his transfer. His wife was ill in the States.
Captain, do you know where Ensign Harding is now?
Well, I have no way of knowing.
Ensign Harding is in San Diego. His wife is fully recovered. He has already been summoned and can be flown up here in 3 hours if necessary. Would it serve any useful purpose to have him testify?
No, I don't see any need of that. Now that I recall, he might have said something about mess boys, and then again he might not. I questioned so many men, and Harding was not the most reliable officer.
I'm afraid the defense has no other recourse than to produce Ensign Harding.
Now, there's no need for that. I know exactly what he'll tell you. Lies. He was no different from any other officer in the wardroom. They were all disloyal. I tried to run the ship properly with a book, but they fought me at every turn. If the crew wanted to walk around with their shirt tails hanging out, that's all right. Let them. Take the tow line. Defective equipment. No more, no less. But they encouraged the crew to go around scoffing at me and spreading wild rumors about steaming in circles and then old Yellowstain. I was to blame for Lieutenant Merrick's incompetence and poor seamanship. Lieutenant Merrick was the perfect officer, but not Captain Queeg. Ah, but the strawberries. That's where I had them. They laughed at me and made jokes. But I proved beyond the shadow of a doubt and with geometric logic that a duplicate key to the wardrobe icebox did exist. And I'd have produced that key if they hadn't pulled the cane action. I know now they were only trying to protect some fellow officer and... One by one.
No further questions, sir.
I'm sorry, I had the wrong clip. That was actually Humphrey Bogart as Captain Quinn Mutiny, and that little squeaky sound was him rolling a pair of steel balls around in his hand as he got crazier and crazier and crazier and crazier. But since we can't have Trump questioned in front of in front of a House of Representatives that is decidedly un-American, we'll have to use our imaginations, and Captain Queeg fits nicely as a stand-in for Commodore Trump. Big thank yous to go out as we come to the end of the filibobster. Thank you very, very kindly for meeting Dr. John's and Tom in the Bay Area's challenges. Thank you so very much indeed. Thank you to Steve and Ms. Karen and little Cletus and little Twiggy. Cletus and Twiggy are such good puppies. Thank you very much indeed. And thank you to David in Florida. And thank you to Harold, Chairman and CEO of the Happy Trails Secret Open Carry Roundup Society. We're ahead of fundraising for the evening, and given what May has been, I can't thank you enough, and hopefully we'll just kind of keep on keeping on at it. Thank you very much to everyone for making this as amazing as it is. So let's take a break. We've had some buffering. Sorry about that. That part of it may actually turn out to be on the streaming PC, and I don't know. I don't have another computer to put in its place to find out, so it's kind of a problem. But anyway, and Ralph's in the chat room. You've seen it too, huh, Ralph's? Oh my God, the American Action Network Try and Care ad is so gross. That thing runs two or three times in the Morning Joe every day, and it makes me a little bit nauseous. It didn't make my Icelandic style yogurt any tastier today. Let's put it that way. So let's take a break and fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. If you'd like to be part of it, you are more than welcome to. Again, if you've never done it before, all you have to do is send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, one word, Sparky Dunk, and Sparky will show you the way and get you into the conversation. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is the Horn, and we'll get the conversation going again, and particularly in the format of something you just can't find anywhere else in progressive broadcasting that I'm aware of. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn.
They want you. They want you. They want you. watching it on the TV.
You kind of knew that bumper was coming, didn't you? It was irresistible. This is the Horn Friday on the front porch. I'm Bob Kincaid, and let's go straightway over to the Horn Molloy Skype chat group and check in with longtime Horn Molloy Skype chat group moderator, Sparky. Are you still in the man cave, Sparky?
Oh, yeah, I'm in the man cave looking up at my Air Force jungle fatigues hanging on the wall.
Oh, you have you been redecorating?
No, but you play in the Navy, and I was thinking why I went in the Air Force, because I don't like the smell of the ocean gets to me.
Well, it...
For some reason.
For me, it's the... I don't know. I don't think it's quite the same being on a... being on a cruise ship. I spent several days, well, a couple of days at least, being seasick as hell.
Mm-hmm.
Was not a good time. But then I figured out if you you don't have to get stupid falling down drunk. If you just drink a couple of beers, the motion doesn't bother you anymore. And I think that's probably why the Royal Navy passed out grog and kept it and kept their sailors about half looped.
Yeah, well,
because the motion of the ocean doesn't bother you then.
I remember the story my dad told me. He only rode on a ship twice, going to Alaska and coming home. And both times he had to sleep in a damn hammock.
Well, I think that's pretty much what everybody does, isn't it?
I don't think they do that in the Navy anymore, but that back then they did.
Because they,
I mean, he went to Alaska and back on a destroyer.
I mean, you kind of slept near your duty station for the most part, if I understood my dad right.
Well, he was cargo. My dad was cargo. He didn't have a duty station on a ship. He was cargo. He was a mechanic being hauled to a ship repair facility. That was his job.
Yeah, coming back from ADAC?
Yeah, and going to there. Well, he went from there. He went to Dutch Harbor first, and then he went to ADAC.
Well, I still want to hit the lottery and buy my sailboat, but I think we're a long way from it.
I was lucky enough to fly with the Pacific 8 times, thanks to the Air Force.
You mean to say you don't have a 30-foot yacht in your backyard, Bob?
No, sorry.
Along with the Maybach, parked next to the Maybach?
Well, and the Gulfstream 5, don't forget that.
That's right.
And that's without thinking about the Olympic-sized swimming pool there, that the pool professional maintains, and the cabana where the cabana professional attends to Agnes's every want and need, and then
yeah,
there's
Bob,
then there's the masseur and the steam room. I mean, in this mansion there are many rooms, at least imagined ones.
I mean, it's amazing. I mean, you know, how do you live on that, making, you know, $200 a night? You know, it's amazing how you make your dollar stretches, Bob.
Well, I'm Scots, okay? I mean, we're frugal. We're frugal.
I thought Germans were cheap, man. But, geez, you take the cake.
Oh, no. I mean, yeah, it's like the, I've told it before. The story of the young Scots boy who was had his glasses on. He'd just gotten some new glasses. And his dad looked at him and said, "What are you reading?" "Nothing, Pa." "What are you looking at?" "Oh, nothing, Pa." "Then take your glasses off. You're wasting them." Tough crowd. Tough crowd. Tough crowd. By dint of necessity, I've been off the air for two nights, and I've been trying to keep up as best I can. I mean, did I pretty much cover the bases of the last 2-3 days? Did I miss anything?
No.
I mean, Rick, you're out there serving at the pleasure of the bar.
Yeah.
Is this as disturbing to you as it is to me?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is like, you know, there was doubt as to whether we're a banana republic, and now we know we are. If, you know, a president can basically fire the man who's investigating him and his administration and not have any, you know, immediate repercussions like happened, you know, with the... you know, in the Nixon years when Archibald Cox was fired by Robert Bork at Nixon's direction, you know? So, you know, and this whole idea that, you know, they tried to, you know, pin it on Rosenstein, you know, tried to rely on him, and then basically Trump walks all over the message by saying, "No, it was my decision to fire him. I knew I'd have to sooner or later," and, you know... And, you know, this whole idea that, you know, that an FBI director has to swear their personal loyalty to their Führer in order to continue their job, even though it's a 10-year term, you know,
over
that's
the
just
top.
Absurd.
Well, and by the way, courtesy of National Petroleum Radio, we now know that his name is Rosenstein.
Oh, okay.
Because in German... E before I is pronounced I before E is pronounced E, so it's Rosenstein.
It's I-E-N?
No,
it's Bob?
It's S-T-E-I-N, Stein.
Oh.
He made that clear at the committee hearing the other day, I think, or when he was introduced.
Frankenstein, whatever, you know?
Right. But,
nice knockers.
But I was glad that NPR did the deep dive to find that out for us. But now that he says that we don't need a special prosecutor. I mean, we're just going to let this shit go if the republic falls to pieces, if we transition from a semi-elected presidency to some sort of hereditary nightmare. You know, that's fine by Rod Rosenstein, because we don't need a special prosecutor. What were you going to say, Steve?
Bob, did you touch on what Trump tweeted out this morning? Comey better not hope there's
anywhere
lunch. You did? Okay, I'm sorry. I'm halfway here, man. Just didn't know if you covered that or not.
Check in here, Rick. I think that's called witness intimidation, and it is a felony, and it's a 3-20.
I have a former client who was charged with basically obstruction with regard to trying to tamper with grand jury witnesses. And he couldn't afford us and had to go with a public defender. So I just saw that, like, the, you know, I Googled his name, and sure enough, out popped the calendar of the post-indictment arraignment. That's basically the initial appearance where you plead either guilty or not guilty, and it was Section 1503 of Title 18, I think.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I'd heard that Larry Tribe was on the TV, one of the shows, on the radio show. It might have been Randy's show. And apparently
Lawrence O'Donnell last night.
Okay. And he was saying that basically Trump is suborning perjury by doing that or something, or suborning obstruction of justice, I think is what it was.
Well, I think we're past suborning now. With that tweet this morning, he actually engaged in it.
Yeah, like it is clearly witness intimidation. There's no doubt about it. I mean, it's, you know, and I think that Comey would probably be a grand jury witness. So, yeah, maybe Trump is looking at a 1503 charge as well, you know.
But,
he's
of course,
also he's also forfeited executive privilege. That's out the window now.
Yes.
But, of course, none of it really matters because you cannot charge a sitting president with a crime, not even murder, not treason, not jaywalking, not nothing. The only thing you can do with a sitting president is, Rick,
impeachment.
Impeach him. And impeachment has to begin in the House, and the House has no interest.
Right. No.
Ho-hum.
Yeah, if anything, there's more interest in the Senate in getting rid of this turkey than there is in the House, the sense I'm getting, you know?
And the, I keep trying to come up with some little happy scenario that says that this all isn't just an exercise in watching Mrs. O'Leary's barn burn.
Yeah.
And the only thing I can come up with is if they develop a bunch of evidence over in the Senate, irrefutable, rock solid, lead pipe cinch, Colonel Mustard with the candlestick in the billiard room stuff, and you get enough senators making noise about it, then that might say to the House, hey, if you impeach this bastard, we've got the 2/3 to remove him over here.
Yeah.
But we are a long, long way from that, Rick. A long way.
Well, we are. We've got a
longer way away from that than it's a long way to Tipperary, okay? We just do.
Yeah, I realize that. But, I mean, what you have to remember is the Saturday Night Massacre where the Attorney General, the Deputy Attorney General were fired for refusing to fire Archibald Cox, and then Cox was fired by Bork. Robert Bork. That occurred, I think, in something like October of 73. And it wasn't until, was it August of 74 that Nixon finally resigned because articles of impeachment had been already drafted and were going to be voted on in the House?
Yeah, and eventually a few, and they were Republicans. They weren't Democrats who went to the White House. It was loyal Nixonian Republicans who went and said, listen, bub, I'm going to vote for him.
Right.
You've got to go.
Climbed on the helicopter and flew away on August 8th, 1974. I will never forget.
But here's a fun trivia question. To whom did Richard Nixon address his letter of resignation?
Henry VIII, Bob.
Close. Henry the Kissinger.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Right. Secretary of State, I guess.
So I guess that means that he, in turn, had to go and tell Gerald Ford.
Oh, geez. Well, I guess the thing we have to keep in mind is the Watergate investigation. The break-in occurred, I think, was it the summer of 72?
Yes.
So, what, June of 72, I want to say? Something like that? I don't know, June, July?
Yes.
Yeah, it took about 2.25 years.
Yeah, so, you know, the problem is I think we sort of live in an instant gratification society. Basically, the world is at our fingertips with the internet and so forth. And so, you know, we have to appreciate that things like this are going to take time. And it's only been, I mean, it seems like 5 years that this thing's been dragging on. But
it's day 112.
Right. And, I mean, it started before he was sworn in, of course, because – you know, it basically started January 6th, I think, when all those intelligence assessments were released. Okay, at least we knew that there was something going on. The investigation maybe has been going on, what, since October or something? Something like that. So, you know, we have to be patient. I mean, and another thing, too, is that, you know, even though there was so much evidence against Nixon, I mean, you know, there were a few happy events that occurred. Like, for example, there was a discovery by through a testimony of a witness to, I think, a Senate committee that there was a taping system in place at the White House.
Yes.
And so, you know, and so that sort of provided a big impetus. So,
well, it was the tapes, you know, that led to the Saturday Night Massacre.
Right. Right. Right, exactly. So,
but there's a difference here.
Yeah.
It's the way the evidence is piled up. See, even without and I covered this in some depth, even without the Trump-Russia thing,
mm-hmm.
even without Mike Flynn, even without Manafort and Carter Page and Roger Stone and Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III, and all of the all of the finagling and the sketchy real estate deals and the Russian oligarch jet that has a habit of landing wherever Trump lands. Without any of that, there's still the emoluments clause, of which he has been in violation since his hand came off the Bible. Okay? And that's impeachable all by itself. And the House is so disinterested in it, they haven't even bothered to pass a law saying, because the Constitution is clear, it says that the Congress can make it legal for the president to violate the emoluments clause. But no, they haven't even bothered. They're absolutely disinterested. They are focused. They're eyes on the prize. They've got a chance to further immiserate the poor, and that's all they're interested in. This stupid health care bill. What Sessions is talking about, shitting on low-level drug offenders. The attempt that they made to gut Meals on Wheels. Trump's presidency is a great big hand job for conservative ideology. Okay.
Yeah. Right.
And you know what? If you're in the middle of getting one of those, you don't say, hey, hold on a minute. I want to talk about some high-minded constitutional principles here. Without regard to gender, you go, keep going, baby.
Yeah, right, right.
No, and that's where the House is. Right.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's useful for their agenda. When he ceases to be useful for their agenda, that's when they can like decide they're going to like turn away from him and throw him out.
And that's the moment when he is not. And that moment.
Stooge with an ink pen.
Well, yeah, Sparky, and that's what I was about to say. That moment arises only when he can no longer grasp his bill signing crayon in his addled rickety hand.
Yeah. Well, that's true. That's true. I mean, one thing I noticed, his approval rating now is down to 36%. 59% of the public disapproves of him. And he's even lost, I think, like 12% favorability in among like white males, you know, which he won overwhelmingly. So, you know, I mean, he's clearly, some of this stuff is starting to sink in to the low information voters. And I mean, if the guy's popularity goes, let's say, south of 20%, then maybe something will happen, you know, just because the Congress critters are afraid of losing their seats, you know?
Yeah, but the fix, I know, little ray of sunshine. The fix is in there, okay? Because the one story I didn't mention, and the one that we all just, I presume a whole bunch of people just kind of blew right past. I noticed our buddy Ron in the gradually thawing north pointed it out. The census director quit this week.
Hmm.
Did you notice that? Because
crickets.
Because
I read it, thanks to Ron.
Yeah, because the census director said he was not going to have anywhere near the budget to do his job, because the job of the census is constitutionally mandated.
Mm-hmm.
And the Republicans want to keep funding for it as low as possible so as to keep the count down and keep the reapportionment down so that they can keep their gerrymandered districts. And I'm one of very few people, and this is not me just, you know, wallowing in my own ego, it just is. I'm one of very few people who during the run-up to the 2016 election said, oh, by the way, there's a census coming up in 2020, and it's going to matter who the president is when that census is taken. Because, see, get in trouble again. This is, you know, that one question IQ test. If we had passed that, then you would have someone in the Oval Office who would be interested in making sure that we get an accurate count that takes into account everybody, not just the white folks with economic anxiety. Oh, and by the way, also this week, we've got a new term to deal with. Anybody read The Atlantic about cultural anxiety? So there's that.
Well, I guess we'll see what happens, Bob. But yeah, the census is a big deal. I guess the only thing I can think of is if, you know, the party in power presidentially does traditionally lose a whole lot of seats, you know, at least in the, you know, in the congressional elections after the, you know, initial presidential election. And, you know, they don't have a huge margin. And if they lose their majority, then we can, then the, you know, House Democrats can start to do these investigations like they should have been done up till now, you know? They've been slow-walked by the House, especially. I mean, it looks like the Senate's doing a marginally better job, but the House has been horrible because of that Devin Nunes cat and then the guy from Texasistan who took over.
Well, that Devin Nunes cat and that Daryl Issa cat and that Jason Chaffetz cat and that Kevin McCarthy cat, and that Paul Ryan cat, and that every Republican member of the House of Representatives cat.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they kind of remind me of the, you know, the incense holders, you know, see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil, like, you know, as far as they don't want to know nothing, you know?
But really, Rick, why would they?
Well, yeah.
Give me one good reason. I mean, yeah, patriotism. Yeah, oath to defend the Constitution. Yeah.
Yeah, that doesn't
caring about the Republic. Yeah.
Yeah.
Promote the
first,
general
yeah.
welfare. Provide for the common defense. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
that's a Democrat's job, Bob. Come on, they know
but,
that.
But I mean, Ralps in the chat room mentioned earlier that awful, 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 call Paul Ryan and thank him for the Republican health care plan. What kind of pathetic creature? Honest to God, if you were Paul Ryan, or if you were an idiot, but I repeat myself, if you were Paul, wouldn't you be humiliated by that ad, by is out there making it look like you were so desperate for adoration that you were having to tell Pianita to call and thank him for fucking. I mean, that's all I could think about this. That's just kind of sad and pathetic. Oh, thank you, Paul Ryan. Thank you so much. I'm going to die in agony and misery. Healthcare. Thank you, Paul Ryan.
And another and another.
Yes, Parky.
You know, they have it all.
Did you read where that congressman next door to Paul Ryan's going to start doing?
Yeah. I saw that.
That's a new action plan the Democrats are adopting.
Yeah, just putting pressure on, making them miserable.
Town hall. The Democrat will go in there and have a town hall. A guy in New York did one the other day. They gave him a standing ovation when the town hall was over.
Yeah, I think I think it would be fun if we could get a couple of Democratic progressive members of the House who can really connect with working people
you know, us white folks with all that economic anxiety, to come in and hold a town hall where people like Evan Jenkins won't. And just humiliate the little bastard. Because he is a chicken shit. He won't show up. He won't answer questions. He's scared to death to be confronted by the people that he voted to fuck. And now he's announced that he's going to run against Joe Manchin for Manchin's Senate seat.
That town hall that guy had in New Jersey the other night was something else. It went on for 5 hours.
Oh, yeah.
And boy, did they jump in his shit.
Oh, it's not like he didn't earn it.
Rightfully so.
Who said rightfully so?
Steve.
Yeah. Go, man.
Bob, do you? We're going to regress a little bit here. Do you still think Comey was in the tank for Trump after everything that's unfolded and he just got burned? Or what is your take on that now?
I think he would. Well, remember, there was a nasty little fifth column operating inside the FBI that was reporting back to Rudy Giuliani. And I think that he was trying to actually balance the two. Looking back, you know, when he testified last week, I said at the beginning of all that, ooh, that guy's got something to hide. Because of the forced, pressured speech, the loud speech, the weird colloquialisms, talking about wizards and magic and all of that bullshit. It was not natural. Was he in the tank for Trump? No, I think he was in the tank anti-Hillary, and there's a difference. Because the Giuliani fifth column was threatening a mutiny inside the FBI.
Well, that seemed to be a consensus, other than a select few, and I'm not going to mention names, that, you know, Comey was in the tank for Trump pre-election. So, you know.
Well, remember, Comey is a Republican, okay?
Yeah, he is. But he got bit. Damned if he didn't get bit. And if he was in the tank, he's got to be looking in the mirror and saying, "What? WTF, man."
It was funny how he was meeting with the FBI in Los
Angeles
and
seen a scroll
when
seen
he found
scroll.
Out about this. Yeah. You know.
Well, I mean, it gets weirder and weirder. Trump sent his personal, not Secret Service, his personal bodyguard to deliver the letter to the FBI. Yeah, while Comey was out of town and out of state, and talking to the field office in L.A.
Right.
And Rick,
hey, Rick.
Oh, I'm
they...
sorry. Let me just cut in here real quick.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm sorry, man. I just want to say something.
No, it's all good, bro. Okay. Go ahead. Yeah. Shoot.
I think we might be looking at this all wrong. That tweet from Trump, it's starting to make more sense about, you know, Comey before he starts leaking. Better think about if the things were being recorded, if it was being taped. I don't think he means the conversation that they were having. I think they mean that the Russians got Comey on tape and something compromising, too, the same way they got Trump. Think about it.
Well, I've wanted, yeah, and it's weird.
Good angle, friend.
Is that you, Les, or?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know why you're showing up as Sparky, but you are. I don't see your little I don't see your little tile here in my window. But
it must be you, Bob. I see him.
Well, it probably,
yeah, I see him too.
It probably is me. You know, I've said for a while that I wondered, because at this point in time, we don't know how far the Russian meddling went. You know, I'm not, and I don't know anybody who is saying that they hacked our little video game voting machines. That ain't what they did. They engaged in a disinformation campaign. And there's reason to believe that it went into it went all the way into house races. And so, you know, part of this is what I refer to as the Michael Jordan gambling on golf syndrome. When you've done everything there is, when you're the best that there is, you've got horse gagging wads of money. What's left? I mean, I think about what's his name, Bennett, the Book of Virtues guy that it turned Republican, of course. The one that said if you really want to if you want to end crime, you abort the black babies. That guy from back in the early aughts.
Fuck that guy.
Well, it turned out that what he liked to do was go to Vegas and sit in his room and not have to deal with any human beings and just have them bring him a video slot machine and just sit there and play it, you know, $100 a point or $1,000 a point or whatever. Because he couldn't get any thrills. And so, you know, when you reach the level of a Comey, who knows what you do? You know, you're the director of the FBI. It's not like you can go out and, you're not some low-level Secret Service agent and you can go and you know, have your way with the hookers while you're on detail in Palm Beach with Trump. Or in Peru with Obama or whatever it was. Secret Service guys are apparently real skags. So you can wind up in compromising situations. Is it money? Is it power? Is it sex? Who knows?
Probably all three, but here's a kicker on this. Comey before, I learned this actually from this show, that Comey was some kind of an executive before, right?
No. He was legal counsel to Lockheed Martin.
Legal counsel.
Yeah, they had to bring him his payday in a goddamn Brinks truck.
Okay, so just like how Cheney was still connected to Halliburton, even though he was a vice president, I think he might still be connected, or you know, has heavily invested in stock in Lockheed. So any kind of action that would cause war would make their stock go up, thus making him richer. I think Comey started off not realizing how stupid Trump was. I think Comey was compromised. I think all the way back from the November 8 election and before that, when he came out with the, you know, with his dress down of Hillary Clinton, even though he doesn't find a reason to charge her, he still had to dress her down anyway. And then, coming out before the election with that, oh, we got more emails crap. I think he was in the tank. I think what's happening is, I think because Trump is so stupid, and he's just basically filleting himself on TV for everybody to see, Comey must have decided that sooner or later, I'm going to get pulled into this. So the only way to get out of this is to now play super cop and act like I'm investigating him. And when the investigation part comes up, you know, with links about myself, I will just sweep that behind the rug. We'll put that in another folder, separate.
Well, that's one thing. That's one thing I
reminded him.
That's one thing, Les, that's one thing that I or we have not mentioned this evening, and that is that the Senate has suddenly taken a lot of interest in money laundering.
Well, I've got a question for Rick that ties into all this, if he's out there. Rick, are you listening? Or Bob, maybe you know, because you're up on legal stuff, too. Now, when Trump fired Comey, did that give him the right to go into his office and seal up everything? Because I have heard that theory floated around.
He didn't even have access to his office, so theoretically he could have. You know, the FBI is part of the Department of Justice and has to answer to the Department of Justice. So theoretically, Rod Rosenstein could have sent a cleaner team over to sweep out the office.
A stooge, yeah. So. That's something we all need to keep in the back of our heads, too.
But just to back up for a moment, the money laundering thing matters. Because there are all kinds of investigations, and there have been prosecutions and convictions of Russian mobsters associated with Trump's Soho Hotel. There was a Russian mob operation operating out of Trump Tower.
And the head of that operation was indicted. And guess where he is now?
He's back in Mother Russia, enjoying the hospitality of Vladimir Putin.
Untouchable. Well, I'm sorry to break in like that, Bob. I'm going to toss it back to you guys.
Well, no, I think that's a valid topic. And yep. You know what I've said all along is the reason the taxes don't come out is because the fucker is broke. Okay, he's a paper billionaire. He's a paper billionaire. And he has, and remember, people in the business world, people like, you know, Michael Bloomberg have said, nobody in the New York business world will touch him because everybody knows that if you do business with Trump, Trump will fuck you. So he burned all those bridges, burned all those connections. And, you know, again, I can't remember if it's Udi or Cudi who said it. But, you know, oh, no, we don't need any financing from banks. We got plenty of Russian money coming into the golf courses. Ah! And now, of course, dipshit says he never said it. But it's a pretty good guess that he did. Because journalists don't just run around making up quotes. And that wasn't even in a financial magazine. He was bragging about that to a guy who wrote about golf, okay? The money is going to be a big part of this. You know, just like in Watergate, you know, finding out who hired the burglars led to the slush fund, and the slush fund led to the committee to reelect the president, and CREEP was run directly by the Attorney General of the United States, John Mitchell. And then the dominoes started falling.
And this has got to be impeachable, and there's got to be over 50 things going on that are impeachable. But the thing is, it starts with the House, and how short are our memories? Come a year and a half now, if we do take back the House, you know, what's going to happen? If the election was held today,
well, if we take it back. If we take back the House and Nancy Pelosi says impeachment is off the table,
goddamn, I'll walk away from politics. You'll never hear from me again, man. I'm done.
Well, no. Don't walk away from politics. Walk to Washington, D.C. and camp the hell out.
With pitchforks and torches, right?
Right. But I also understand that she's not going to stand around howling for impeachment, because that will, you know, that's just, you know, we're Southern guys. We understand our football analogies. That's just bulletin board material.
Well, we've played this tape before, you know. This is nothing new. We've watched this movie before.
I believe the water is not hot enough yet to boil the frogs.
No, I think the frogs have to get boiled. You're right. You're absolutely right, Sparky.
We have to let the Republicans wallow in their, because this appears to me to be stuff that's operating on the level of Greek tragedy. Okay, and Greek tragedy requires at its center a whopping big bolus dose of hubris. Now they got hubris aplenty over in the White House. But they haven't quite run the hubris quotient up enough in the House. They might yet, but they haven't yet. So, you know, just to think about. And, you know, Barkway in the chat room said, bingo, Bob, Trump doesn't want people to see he's really property rich and cash poor. And, you know, there was Jared Kushner's sister hawking visas to Chinese investors if only they would drop $500,000 on some tacky piece of shit real estate development in Jersey. Y'all still there?
Yeah,
oh, okay.
I'm there, Bob.
Yeah, I'm here. I was doing something delicate. I was setting a rat trap.
I mean, let's change the facts a little bit. Let's say that Obama had the real estate empire and was black, of course. And let's say he had a let's say Michelle Obama's brother-in-law was out hawking citizenship for Chinese citizens who U.S. citizenship for Chinese citizens who wanted to invest, let's say, in Robinson Enterprises, you know. Robinson Real Estate Enterprises in, let's say, Chicago. you folks pay $500,000, you can get in through the U.S. I mean, just think about the outrage there would have been, with the GOP controlled House, if that had been the situation, But I guess as long as they got an R behind their name, they can basically be as big a crook and a scoundrel and a psychopath as they can be, just as long as, the House Republicans, Senate Republicans are getting their, wish lists granted, I think the irony here is, though, that so very little is getting done because everything seems to be getting drowned out by just this constant stench of the scandal. It's like one thing after another, And I think it really is weighing down, Trump. He's losing it. I mean, maybe our best bet for him getting him out of the office is to have either an aneurysm, a stroke, or heart attack, or let's just say he gets hauled off, in a straitjacket, after he's had a total psychotic breakdown,
You know what? He could. I'm sorry. I don't mean to gainsay everything that everybody says. But we're talking about the President of the United States. Ronald Reagan, at the end of his term, wasn't home. Alzheimer's was already taking its toll. If Donald Trump,
he had good minders, Bob.
Yeah, but if Donald Trump goes barking mad, you have to have somebody who's willing to do something about it. And frankly, if he goes barking mad, that's a mental illness issue or a mental disability issue, and it's not like getting shot, like what happened with Reagan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's not the same thing by a long shot. I trust him to let him be. It's just Trump being Trump.
Allegedly, he has gained 67 pounds since his last checkup.
Are you serious? Over what period of time? Is that over a year?
I don't have a time frame. I just caught a bit of piece of that on the scrolly thing today.
Jeez.
So that's a lot of weight, and he doesn't look good.
Well, actually, he looked very good when he was hanging out with the Russians in the White House
without any Americans present.
I mean, just think of all the surveillance devices they could have installed,
Oh, yeah, we missed that, didn't we, Bob?
Well, we didn't miss it, but I left it off the list somehow.
Right.
Do you remember the right before Christmas episode of Saturday Night Live when Pootie Poot came down the chimney and brought him and brought Trump an elf on the shelf and said, "It's elf on shelf. It's great fun. Set it right next to internet router."
art imitating life, because this just happened within the last few days. They only let Russians film some kind of press conference.
But then
who knows what the hell they planted in there?
Steve, the best part of it was when somebody pointed out to them that was Toss. You let the Russian media in, but you didn't let the U.S. media in, the U.S. press. And by the way, that's the same thing. It's a government controlled press agency, and they brought all kinds of electronics in, and God only knows what they left behind. And the White House said, "Well, it wasn't fair. They
those tricky Russians tricked us. We had no idea that those weren't just government photographers like we have government photographers.
Because, see, the official White House photographer was in there. But the American press was not. And I've read where a couple of CIA operatives just were holding their little heads in their little hands going, really? They did that? God only knows how many different signals are emanating from the Oval Office right now.
And if the Russian embassy is still on the hill where it was years ago, you know there's a great line of sight to get the signal from the White House to the Soviet or former Soviet embassy.
Oh, sure.
Sorry for just,
hi, Scott.
Sorry. I'm one hardly knows what to bring up next. I mean, see, I used to be a pretty fair student of the Kennedy assassination. But I'm not too shabby when it comes to Watergate, okay? And some of the questions about, you know, parallels to the Watergate era. I mean, the night of the Saturday Night Massacre, okay, where Nixon fires Attorney General Richardson because he won't fire Cox, okay? So they go down the line. So he's gone. The next guy in charge, he won't fire Cox.
And okay? Quits.
So he quits, all right, and Nixon, you know, they're rummaging through the lower bowels of the Justice Department to find out.
Well, at that point in time, number three on that list is the Solicitor General, who was Robert Bork.
Yes, who winds up firing Archibald Cox, but then somebody, I guess it was Steve, who asked. You know, with the firing of Comey, did they have a cleanup crew go into Comey's office to sanitize it? Well, there's a parallel in history. Once they got rid of Archibald Cox, the FBI marched in, the Nixon loyalists from the FBI marched into the Justice Department and sealed all of his files in his office. And it got to the point where Cox the next day gave a press conference on a Saturday, mind you, or Sunday, whichever one it was. So I guess it was Sunday by that time. Gave a live coast-to-coast national hookup press conference the following day to talk about the inside skinny on what had transpired. And it was only because they had tried to seal all of those documents, okay, and possibly shred them, that Cox waved the flag, which brought it to the attention of the people. And that's the problem. We may know what's going on. We may see it through historically informed eyes. But there's still a fair number of people. We haven't reached the tipping point yet that you were alluding to earlier, you know, where enough people will be aware enough to the point that something can be done. Something can be demanded to be done, okay? But I don't know. It gets more fun by the minute, and by fun I mean interesting, okay? Because it's not my first rodeo. I've seen this shit, you know, echoes of this stuff from the past. And it's just downright disheartening. And I have a point of order for you, Senator Kincaid. What is this if business? If Trump becomes, what was the expression you used, barking mad? I don't doubt that he already has.
No. Well, okay, but yeah, let me draw the distinction there, Scott. And you guys are going to have to help me out because that's two people I can't see. That's you and Les. So. People are just going to have to jump in because I can't necessarily see people. I don't know why, but it's a Skype thing and whatever.
Well, my point is.
I'm talking about the real where he just sits around and plays with his drool and flings poo and you know is just obviously gone. Not like he is right now, where it's just,
you look up and go, well, you know, it's kind of hard to define it, Scott, because it's pretty obvious that he's gone.
Well,
you know, when the meat puppet is going on and on every morning about he's not well, he's not well. But the thing is, they got to find somebody in government who's willing to look up and say the same thing. And even the damn Democrats aren't saying it, with a few very few exceptions. Congressman, what's his name? Congressman Liu of California, he's saying it, but he's not being given a whole lot of oxygen to say it in.
Bob, at this point, hello?
Yeah.
Hello? Okay. At this point, I'm fairly confident that from day one, I mean, as soon as they hung the portrait of Andrew Jackson in the Oval Office, Trump on a daily basis, maybe hourly basis, has ongoing dialogues with the portrait, like Nixon used to have toward the end with the portraits of the former presidents in that hallway, which I've been to, but I forget which hallway it was, you know. It's pretty scary. And I there's no word yet on who the permanent FBI director will be now that Comey is gone. But I hear that there are plans afoot to exhume J. Edgar Hoover and reanimate him, because he was pretty good at covering up a lot of stuff over the years. So
I just expect it to be Giuliani.
No, yeah, probably.
Yeah, he could do a good J. Edgar Hoover. I mean, he already dresses in drag all the time.
Well, there you go. He put that on his resume. But I had a TV viewing tip for the fun lovers and truth seekers. If you have Netflix,
see,
just recently added to the lineup is a documentary that you must watch. Now, let me say that you will not like it. It will outrage you. It will upset you.
So this is not my Friday night after Friday on the front porch relaxing viewing time. This is more like noon tomorrow.
Well, this is informative viewing because it'll actually make you feel ill, like Comey felt ill.
Yeah, but I don't want to do it right before bed. Dig? That's not before bed viewing. But anyway.
Well, anyway. The documentary just was added to the Netflix lineup. It's called Get Me Roger Stone. And it'll explain exactly why we are where we're at politically. And hopefully it will be enough to cause people to know enough, to be angry enough, to get fully engaged right now to do whatever's required to help get us out of the mess that the country is in. Because it all comes down to knowing what's going on. And if you watch this film, I mean, I'm a pretty close observer, and I had known a little about Roger Stone's history. But I'm telling you, if you have Netflix, it's worth it to sign up for the free one-week trial just to see this documentary, Get Me Roger Stone, because it will curl your hair. And if you don't have hair, I don't know what it'll curl, but it'll curl something. I mean, this guy is evil incarnate. And he is, remember how they used to talk about Karl Rove as Bush's brains, W's brain?
Sure.
Okay. All right. Karl Rove is to Bush as Stone is to Trump. Everything that Trump knows or thinks he knows has been informed over the years, decades, by the influence of Roger Stone. And this documentary lays it out, and it is worth seeing. Now, at this point, and then I'll stand aside and let somebody else jump in. At this point, what I want to know is, and bringing up another Watergate parallel, back during the Nixon days, we had two things working in our favor. We had a news media that actually knew about presenting news, okay? So we had that happening. But we also had people in the FBI who were not on the Nixon bandwagon. And I have in mind Mark Felt, who was
Deep throat, dude. Spit it out.
He's the confidential source to Bob Woodward.
Yeah, deep throat.
During the Watergate. Well, who is this generation's Walter, who knows the business of news enough to dispense it in a straight ahead manner? Because do you remember? And I forget how old you are, Bob. You're a couple of years. There was a point in Watergate where the Washington Post was the only of consistently covering Watergate and uncovering stuff. 72, that Walter Cronkite did a two-night series, mini-series on the CBS Evening News, where he basically brought everybody up to date on what happened when. Before he stood up. He walked away from the anchor desk and stood up in front of a blue screen or a Vizmo behind him that had all the graphics as he spoke. They would pop up on the screen. And you've got to figure that people who had watched him for years sitting in their living rooms, who was that couple, Marvelline and...
Emery and Marvelline?
Emery and Marvelline. You know, Emery probably was taken aback when he sees Walter standing up and said, Marvelline, get in here. Cronkite's standing up. This must be important. You know. So who is this generation's Mark Felt, and who is this generation's straight-ahead journalist who can move us forward to where we need to be? That's my question.
Someone is leaking from inside the White House. And I'm just as happy as I can be not knowing. And there are unnamed sources who apparently are running to the media to get information out. You know, stories about Trump wandering the halls in the middle of the night talking to the portraits. You know, it took Nixon 8 years to get to that point. It's taken Trump 112 days.
Well, he was at that point before he got there, before he got the gig. And I think a lot of people in their heart of hearts knew it. But it was that thing of hoping for the best. It was that thing about being so disgruntled about the way things are that they ignored the old Chinese proverb, I'd rather have one dragon that I know than 12 dragons that I don't know, you know?
And as for who's the journalist, I don't know if the modern media are capable of producing that person.
Does anybody here watch Rachel Maddow?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I watch her every night. And Lawrence O'Donnell, too.
They're doing a pretty good job tearing apart the Russian thing.
But the thing is, Sparky, the distinction as I understand it from the way Scott described it. You know, when you're talking about back during Watergate, you're talking about somebody that the whole country watched. Cronkite, it went Cronkite and then Brinkley and then ABC. And that was it.
Yeah.
You know, you couldn't
know that better than you guys.
Right. And so you couldn't go over into, you couldn't just camp out in your own little ideological ghetto like Fox News and hide from reality. Rachel's doing good work. O'Donnell's doing good work. Chris Hayes is doing good work. But they're not going to reach. They're not going to reach the majority of America, I guess is what I'm saying. Although MSNBC's, you know who's reaching more of America than anybody else in terms of putting information out there about Trump? Stephen Colbert.
Yeah.
Oh, did you see his thing from last night?
With the Daily Show reunion.
No. Last night when he finally said, Trump has recognized me, he said my name, and then he goes, I win. I'm under his skin. That's what he's basically saying.
And it's true. It's true. I mean, it's
every comedian out there that's talking about him is waiting for him to mention him now and then they'll...
No talent.
Yeah, because remember how
Bill Maher was so proud of Trump suing him.
Yeah.
They're all out there digging. They're all out there. Samantha Bee, they're all out there trying to get their shovels in him and make him squeal.
And arguably push him over the edge.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, he's already obviously deeply paranoid. You know, if people like Kimmel or Seth Meyers or Colbert, Samantha Bee, John Oliver, Trevor Noah, is that his name? Comedy Central.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If they started, if there was a combined effort, say, you know, you're all alone, Donald. Who can you trust, Donald? Nobody. You're all by yourself.
Michael Moore said on All In, he said the comedians are going to drive him over the edge.
Right, because you know, especially in real time in front of an audience, when he can actually hear hundreds of people laughing at him. Not laughing with him, laughing at him.
Well, remember I said one of the things that is going to undo him is the fact that his order of worship and his way of being is to be right and look good by making others bad and wrong. And the other key personality trait is he cannot abide ridicule or being made to look bad. And those are the two key things. I mean, if you can make him get through to him, get under his skin, you know, like Colbert said, you know, that's half the battle right there. The other half of the battle is, luckily, you know, we had someone like Mark Felt high up in the FBI, okay? And I kind of think that the firing of Comey is not sitting well. I mean, Trump would make you think that the entirety of the FBI was disgruntled at the way Comey was doing his job, but that's not necessarily true. It's not true at all, actually. There's I'm sure, a fair number of solid FBI people who are career law enforcement people.
Giuliani put that shit in his ear. The FBI was all fucked up because of the New York office.
Yeah. Right, but Andrew McCabe, who is now the acting FBI director because he was number two under Comey, went on the Hill yesterday and said Director Comey enjoyed the broad respect and admiration of virtually the entire bureau. And so he put the lie to that right away.
Yeah.
Frankly, as far as News Today is concerned, the thing that disturbs me most is this item being reported by CNN and then in turn disseminated by Reuters that Rod Rosenstein says he has no there's no need for a special prosecutor. Well, if that's the case, then let's all just go home. Because if ever there has been a matter that needs a special prosecutor, this is it. I mean, remember the story a couple of weeks ago? We said, wow, you know, the Senate is certainly taking this seriously, and Lindsey Graham has gotten all the way up off the fainting couch down at Smoldering Chode. Well, there was a story, 2 weeks ago? The Senate committee has no permanent staff assigned to the investigation. They have no infrastructure for it. It's just another thing they're doing, and that's not that doesn't inspire confidence. And if they put up some sort of blue ribbon commission, well, remember the 9/11 commission? Commissions can't figure out what to order for lunch or what to put on a pizza, let alone get to the bottom of something as complex as this, with as many different aspects and tentacles.
that there has to be a special prosecutor. If there isn't, fuck it. Let's all go home and just say this is how this is how what used to be the Republic is going to operate from now on. And we can all just get ready and wait for January 20th, 2025, when Ivanka becomes our first woman president. Okay?
The table is still.
Not that we even get that far.
You know, Trump canceled his meeting with the FBI. He was going to go meet with them after firing Comey, and they told him, don't come out here. You will not be greeted warmly. So he pulled out.
Yeah.
Coward.
FBI agents switch their profile pictures to Comey's picture on, like, Twitter and social media?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they all. I was looking at it on Twitter early. They all switched it to a picture walking up to his house. All the agents switched it over. And that tells me, well, I shouldn't say it tells me, but I imagine that even if Comey had some dirt that the Russians could use to exploit him, and that's the reason why he did what he did back last year, but the fact that he went out and fell on his sword and got fired by Trump, or did enough to make Trump fire him, and now he started a vendetta with the whole damn FBI. How is that going to pan out? They don't have dirt on all of them, so somebody's going to get them.
Well, it works in our favor, because see, while all this is going on, see, do you ever see the Twilight Zone movie in the early 80s? It had three vignettes that were based on previous Twilight Zone TV episodes, and one of them
to when I was a little kid. I can't remember.
Well, one of the vignettes had to do with the little kid who basically entices people to come to his house, and he's already destroyed his mother and his father and his sister, I think. But he can cause stuff to happen or not happen just by merely wishing it. Okay, and if something's not working for him, he'll wish it away, okay? Trump is the little kid in that Twilight Zone episode. He wants to wish things that displease him away. Well, he can wish all he wants. He can blow out all the candles on the cake every hour of the day, and he's not going to get his wish in this regard. Because while all of this is going on, he got there on the premise that he would make America great, he would bring back jobs, he would take care of the little guy. And to the extent that he fails at all of those campaign promises, that is going to eventually cause some of his former supporters to look at him with some clarity, and also some in the House and Senate who never liked him to start with. So we've got that working in our favor.
Yeah, that's assuming that everything stays static. But just like the last Republican president, when the numbers was going down and questions were being asked, oh, shit, here's 9/11. No more questions are being asked. Everybody get behind the guy. And I think if push starts to come to shove, you got a 70-year-old man, you think he's going to willingly just go to prison when his finger's on the button? It just seems too easy that a terrorist attack could happen.
Well, Stan.
And then next thing you know, we're in a war.
Stand by, Les. I mean, I'm not saying what you're saying is untrue. But if the president commits a crime, the only thing you can do about it is impeach him. If he's impeached and then he's tried in the Senate, he gets removed from office.
But he still can be forced to testify, as we know, AKA Bill Clinton.
Then he can be criminally prosecuted unless he's pardoned. See, that was the whole point of Ford. Ford pardoned Nixon because even though Nixon had resigned, he was still facing a significant criminal prosecution. So, that's the kind of chess moves that get worked out on the way out the door.
But Bob, he can still be forced to testify, aka Bill Clinton, correct?
In a civil proceeding, theoretically, yes. But the arguments have already been made by his lawyers that no, you can't make a sitting president testify
even though that precedent was established with Clinton, and the precedent was established by, in terms of lawyering, by none other than Kellyanne Conway's husband.
Because it was a civil proceeding. That's the difference, isn't it?
Right.
That's the catch.
I mean, that's like the idiots out there. Well, Clinton was convicted of perjury. No, he wasn't. There was never a criminal prosecution. He was found to have given untruthful testimony in a civil proceeding. That does not constitute a criminal conviction, because a criminal conviction must be had by proof beyond a reasonable doubt. Again, I only see a few people here, but I'm told that Ron has popped into the room, and we haven't heard from Ron in a while. Hey, Ron.
Hey, Bob. Nobody's more surprised to find me here than me.
Are you supposed to be elsewhere?
No, I was just sitting here minding my own business, watching from the bleacher seats, and all of a sudden, my phone rings. Being the curious sort, I answered it, and lo and behold, here I am.
Well, very good, very good. Are you all nice and thawed out up there now?
Oh, I played golf today.
And you shot how? Did you shoot well?
I did. Lowered my handicap.
Oh, well,
shot
now.
Shot an 82.
Ooh, somebody was putting.
No, I couldn't hit my ass with a banjo, but it was, you know, they went straight and I found them all. So, to me, that's a hallmark.
That's like winning anytime you don't have to buy more golf balls. So, are you just sitting up there in the communist north and watching all the comedy unfold down here?
Oh yeah, it's amazing the number of people that think they know what's going on in the U.S. up here, really don't. But there's an almost visceral shudder when you mention Trump. I mean, even our conservatives don't like Trump. One potential candidate, there's a leadership effort going on now to select a new leader for the Federal Conservative Party, now that Harper's resigned. And I think it pulled about 15 people out of the woodwork, including financiers and Trump wannabes, and one female, of all things, candidate who is a member of parliament, who immediately tried to say that we should screen all potential immigrants for their understanding of Canadian values. She got hooted down from coast to coast. It was amazing. There were, you know, the 10% rednecks all supported her, but it was clear to everybody in the leadership of the Conservative Party that, oh, no, we don't want her anywhere near running for prime minister. So she's disappeared. So it's been a life lesson for Canadians that, okay, don't let an ignorant, crazy asshole get in charge. And, you know, I'm sorry to say we're learning at your expense, but the lessons are being learned. We've got Trudeau. In another world and time, he would be regarded as a lightweight. Right now, he can take the Canadian flag anywhere in the world.
And be greeted like Elvis.
Absolutely. Macron may be able to do the same thing in France. It's hard to say. And I wouldn't be surprised to see a movement unfold in Great Britain to get rid of. They've got more.
To get rid of Theresa Mayhem?
Yeah, but there's more class distinction in the UK, and it's more entrenched and will take a lot longer to get rid of. So the idea of somebody like a Trudeau coming in there to me seems rather far-fetched. But I'd like to think that the UK in general will get their shit together at some point and not leave the EU. We'll see. They've been stupid in the past. They can do it again. But.
Well, and there's still the German elections coming up, too.
Yeah. Yeah. I got nothing there. They are the foundation of the entire European economy. So.
Well, and Angela Merkel is now the leader of the free world.
Yeah, but they don't have nukes, so she's just a, you know, a wannabe. She's got less impact on media profile than the dipstick in North Korea. You know, she's sane. She's very effective at her job. She's a good politician. She's got all the charisma of a fire hydrant. And she's running a good country. They are efficient. But I don't think she's going to sway any world opinion. It's just me.
Well,
I plan to call in, so I'm pulling all this shit right off the top of my head.
That's okay. How are you and the Rev getting on these days?
I pretty much slacked off on the Rev for the last couple of weeks and moved onto some really good red wine.
Well, I was going to say, it's coming up spring. That's gin season.
No. Okay. I've had a couple of bitter experiences with gin. And gin's even lower on my list now than tequila.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of those Georgia. Oh, my.
I've never been able to hack that. There's a taste.
The juniper pine cone taste?
That taste, yep.
Yep. Yeah, because the word gin comes from the Dutch word for juniper, which is juniper.
Yeah. Well, like I say, it's just it's below even tequila. So.
Well, that's what makes all of this that, you know, I'm leading the life sanitary and watching this madness. With no recourse to reality adjustment.
Yep.
Tain't easy.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Sparky.
I think Tracy's jumping at the bit to get in.
Go, Tracy. See, I can't see you, Tracy, so I don't know you're there. You got to jump in.
Well, I'll be back you up, man.
Okay, cool. Thanks.
Well, I'll be gone.
All right. Good weekend to you.
I'll be listening. Okay, take care.
Hit them like you live, low and hard.
Bye.
Sorry for pulling you in, Ron.
No problem. I tried to do my best to measure up to expectations.
Go, Tracy.
I think she's there. She was lighting up. I don't know. Maybe
can you hear me?
There she is.
She is.
I was actually kind of just listening. I was actually finishing up my homework. You know, what an exciting way to spend a Friday night. But hey, I'm getting A's in all my homework, so I must be doing something right.
Gold star.
Yay, gold star. Yeah, I'm taking anthropology and critical thinking.
Ooh, anthropology, one of my loves.
Yeah, did you know that Zora Neale Hurston was an anthropologist?
I regret to say that I don't.
Yeah, she she was the first black woman to graduate from Bernard, and that's where she got her training as an anthropologist. And what she did was, as a matter of fact, all of her novels and her subsequent writings was because of the stuff that she learned doing her field work in Haiti and Jamaica, and where else did she go? Basically throughout the Caribbean, studying and in the rural South, studying the speech patterns and the ways of black folks. Come on.
I did not know. Thank you for that. I've learned something new.
But yeah, and hold on. So my son is asking me, we're going to probably have pizza again for dinner.
Dan wants a sandwich.
Well, actually, we're probably going
to... Hey, Alex.
Hey, how's it going?
Good to talk to you, man.
Yeah, well, I don't know who I'm talking to, but hey.
Well, you know how I'm always on the radio or the phone. This is, everybody, this is Bob, Bob's, Alex, Bob.
Hey.
Howdy.
I would actually have him listening to, sit down and listen to your show one day. And,
no, I'll never do that.
No, not talk. No, you not talk.
No, and I'm not going to listen either.
Yes, you are.
No.
Listen to your mother.
Wait, are you paying for my sandwich? Because then I'll listen.
Yes, I'll pay for your sandwich.
If I listen?
If you listen
did
to
you guys hear that? That's you guys are witnesses.
What kind of sandwich? We're into food porn here, Alex.
Probably a...
Well, I'm going to get the meatball, but they were skimpy on the meatball, so I'm going to pay the extra. Oh, wait, no, you're paying the extra for the whole meatballs.
Oh, man.
And I'll pay for it.
Throw some artichokes. Throw some artichoke hearts on there. You'll be a happy man.
Ooh, artichoke hearts on...
What?
Oh, look, his whole face just... Ooh, his whole
face...
Yeah,
artichoke hearts on a meatball sub with parm. You can thank me later.
I'm gonna go see if I can do. Well, I'm gonna call it in.
Yeah, his whole face just lit up when you said artichoke hearts on a meatball sub.
That sounds amazing.
You just made his.
We
day.
Will not lead
well,
you
no,
wrong
I
here.
You might have hurt my feelings for the night.
We won't lead you wrong here. You know, I mean, we give your mama a whole lot of hell about mayonnaise, but apart from that, we will not steer you wrong.
I'll do the. I got just enough white in me that I can do mayonnaise.
Well, I see. We tried to get her into. I was pitching this. Y'all got Ralph's out there. A few months back, I was pitching this Kroger Private Selection, Ralph's Private Selection, lemon dill aioli. Holy cow, is that good?
Ooh, and it's Ralph's brand.
Well, yeah, they got the private selection label at Ralph's just like they do at Kroger's.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, it's
dill
some...
and see, two things, dill and mayonnaise. See, you know, just because I live with a half-white person and a full-white person...
No, she's the whitest person in the house. Don't...
You she, know, wait, she who?
Talking about me, because of...
Oh, well, see, the family
she's,
closet
no.
is open.
Cause see, they,
with a Chatsworth.
They tease me because, well, my family teases me because, yes, I went to school in the Valley, and so I get teased about the way I speak and all that. So
yeah, she doesn't. What is it? Curve her R's. What is it?
I leave the R's on my words and my
and
the T's.
She says the whole word like this.
You see what you started, Bob. You see.
Don't worry, I'm the second whitest in the family, so I can.
Yeah, well, I still got y'all beat all the.
Even, I listen to Woody Guthrie and Sandy Denny and folk, so.
And you pronounce the L in folk too, so you know. That's okay. I still got you beat. I can still I burn under the refrigerator light bulb. So you know, don't get too full of yourself.
He gets sunburn from the light bulb in the refrigerator. That's just how white he is. See, at least Alex has enough melanin that when he was born though, when he came out, my mom said put him back in. He's not done yet. He was just that white. He had no color until he was two. So, but now we know that he has just enough color that he could be Muslim. He could be Hispanic. He could be what?
Yeah, racially
be,
ambiguous.
Yeah, that's what.
Oh, okay. So this is that period of the program, Tracy, where you know, like you do have to from time to time, you have to speak for all black people.
Yes, I am now speaking. Is this the Ask a Negro section of the show?
Well, okay, if it has to be.
Well, you got a Negro and a Negro and a half Negro. So go ahead and ask.
Okay. So am I? I was accused by some wingnut of having white liberal guilt the other day, on Twitter.
Ooh.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, you know me. I pay attention to things. I see things. You know, especially in terms of marketing and. So, has anybody seen the McDonald's commercial where the young black kid comes running into McDonald's, and what they're doing is they're pitching their McDonald's helps kids go to college program?
Oh, no.
So,
Yes, saw it last night.
Okay, so young black kid comes running in, and he's got this letter in his hand, and his manager says, "Is that it?" And he goes, and I think he nods. I don't even think the black kid gets a fucking line in this commercial, okay? And so he just kind of, with shaking hands, he hands the envelope to his manager, who is, you know, I'm guessing white.
Oh, I'm guessing.
And the manager then opens the letter and says, "Dear Sebastian, after careful consideration, we are pleased to tell you that you have been accepted for the fall term." And all the multiracial diverse crew there at the McDonald's goes, "Yay!" And Sebastian just smiles, and the voiceover comes on. "Every year, McDonald's helps lots of kids go to college because we're McDonald's and we're wonderful." And I'm such a jerk. I'm sitting there going, how come the overseer had to read?
The manager helped him learn to read. He's very grateful to white people. He wanted
children to learn. Children,
okay, Tracy. Tracy, you're going to have to keep buying sandwiches because Alex is adding a lot to the conversation right now. Artichoke hearts.
Yeah, I'm gonna go look that up. Ice commercial.
Yeah, just look it up on YouTube. I just want to be the only one who doesn't watch it and go.
As a matter of fact, when Alex got all of his acceptance letters to college, and because he was, and actually that happened to Alex, I actually brought the letters to him. And I had to him at work. And just so happens, when one of his letters, guess who was at the yogurt shop? With, kid you not, Warren Beatty and Annette Bening.
Nice.
Pretty nice tip.
Very nice.
Warren Beatty read the letter to Alex?
No. Warren Beatty did not. I said he read the letter while Warren Beatty and Annette Bening were in the yogurt shop. You know.
Oh, okay. I've got a
question about this McDonald's commercial.
Pay attention.
Because I've seen it myself on the TV here. Which college is this that little Sebastian has been accepted to? Because
it doesn't say.
Yeah, it's just college U.
Well yeah, dude, he handed the letter to the supervisor, so...
Well,
he wanted the supervisor to read it, you know.
The last time I was at McDonald's.
My first job scholarship thing was
he's
McDonald's.
Going to, he's yeah, I know that. But, so he can boo Dorothy DeVos when he graduates.
But the last time I was at a McDonald's, all the cash registers had pictograms instead of verbiage on the buttons. So I want to know which college this is. This has got to be the closed cover before striking. School of VCR and gun repair or something. This
okay, wait a minute. There's our first cowbell of the evening. I would have shortened it to just the Draw Spunky School of Nuclear Technology, but yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
I have a question, though. You did, Bob, leave off one thing. Who was the tone-deaf idiot that invited Bessie DeVos to a historically black college, university?
That would be the tone-deaf president of the university.
It's like, motherfucker, please. But really?
Old Clarence Thomas-looking ass.
It's like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
When I read that, I'm like, wait a minute, I was reading
and they
something.
Booed her and turned her around. And did you, now, these are college graduates. These are 22-year-olds. And he addressed them like seventh graders. If y'all keep doing that, you won't get your diplomas today. You'll get them in the mail.
This is like what happens with intergenerational trauma and internalized oppression. That's what happens. People internalize their oppression, and then they go, and then they're traumatized, so they don't know how to fight back. Okay, that's enough.
Kept their backs turned and kept booing, and she just went on with her.
But
they got their diploma.
After what she said about black, that the perfect example of school choice were black colleges. Are you stupid? See you next Tuesday.
Critical. I'm sorry. Wait a minute. Second cowbell. We're having a flurry of cowbells late in the program.
Critical thinking 101. It's like, okay, hello. The reason why we had to have black colleges is because, first of all, it was illegal for black people to even get an education. So then after the civil, you know, we were, you know, that thing called the 13th Amendment, and they let us actually, you know, be free. So we, and the white folks didn't want us educated in the first place, and they didn't want us at their colleges. So we had to set up black colleges so we could be educated, you stupid, moronic bitch.
See you next Tuesday, yes.
You didn't know shit, so how did, anyway. She doesn't know shit.
And
so.
Even and for that, who's the president of that school? To even
I don't know which school was it.
Bethune-Cookman.
Bethune-Cookman. And to even have to invite her to that school was a slap in the face. And well, you see what the students did. They're like, I would have rather have had Suge Knight do the commencement address.
Well, I mean, how many degrees of Kevin Bacon is it to go from having Betsy DeVos address Bethune-Cookman to just saying fuck it and having David Duke do the commencement?
Oh God, right. Help!
Right. Yeah, let's cut through the chase and just, you know, be direct here, and yeah, exactly.
I mean, like I said, at least Suge Knight is an entrepreneur.
Why does this dude from Bethune-Cookman feel that he has to play the Uncle Tom card?
Because, like, who's the one that said about...
Well, he's probably got his. He probably votes Republican.
He probably...
Nigum Foo.
Right.
He's an Uncle
he's
Tom...
He's pulled the ladder up after he's achieved success, basically.
I got mine. Fuck y'all.
Just like Uncle Clarence. Like Uncle Clarence.
Uncle Clarence. Uncle Clarence.
Yeah.
Wooey.
You know, it kind of reminds me, the reaction of the students reminds me of a, I think it was an address that, I don't know if it was Alberto Gonzalez gave to, maybe it was Harvard or something, and everybody, like, turned their back on him. All the students, like, got up and turned their back on him, you know? They didn't expect him. Who was that?
My question is, I would expect, you know, I remember when I was going to Valley College, and I was on the committee. I was on student council.
Was this in Van Nuys?
Yes. So we I was on the committee to choose the who spoke at the commencement ceremony. And so there was a list of people, and at the year that I was on student council, we wound up choosing Antonio Villaraigosa. He was the mayor that year. He was the mayor. Now, considering, you know, you consider who the person is, what they have to offer, the audience and who they're speaking to, you know, and all that. Now, you don't think anybody thought, okay, Betsy DeVos, she is anti-school, you know, public schools, a lot of these, she's definitely anti, she's a Trump appointee, and all this, she's probably not hip with the black folks and all this, and this is who you choose of all the people in America that you could have chosen, and then to pick up, not to say that a white person couldn't speak at a historically black college, but to pick, of all the white people that you could have picked, you pick her?
Tracy. It's possible they got grizzly problems and they need to have guns there at the Bethune-Cookman College, right?
Oh, Jesus. Hey, wait a minute. I'm gonna interrupt because there's a discussion going on in the chat room about the whole catapult comment that I was talking about earlier this evening.
Yeah, I heard that.
I'm awarding myself a cowbell because we have a new name. Commodore Cantaloupe.
Oh, that's a good one.
Tracy and Rick, I wanted to ask a question. You both are in L.A. I noticed that the high school that my brother and sister went to, which was El Camino Real in Woodland Hills, and Taft High School, which was the high school that people went to in Woodland Hills before El Camino Real was even built, they're both charter schools. What's up with
that? Taft is a charter school now? Because my ex used to go there.
Yeah, what's up with these charter schools that are happening in those places? What's going on there that they're making these places charter schools?
I think the city council has ties to the charter school industry, is my guess, Larry. I'm not sure. What about you, Tracy?
Well, from what I've actually been paying a lot of close attention to this, because we have an election coming up on, is it May 16th? Yeah, May 16th, because at first the charter schools were supposed to be just an experiment, because LA Unified was getting too big, and it was supposed to, you know, be an experiment to see about improving, you know, schools within the LA Unified school district. And some of the money from LA Unified were going to the charter schools. But now it's becoming, there's no oversight. Mm-hmm. They do not have to, I mean, they don't have to answer to LA, they don't have to answer to LA Unified. The teachers are not in the union. They don't have to have the same credentials as LA Unified. It's a hot mess. Now, I'm not saying that all charter schools are bad, but the majority of them are bad. As a matter of fact, Birmingham is a charter school now. My son's school of former high school, Cleveland, is a charter school now. It's getting to the point where a lot of the schools are becoming charter schools, and they're siphoning money out of LA Unified, of the regular schools, and it's getting out of control.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that idea. I mean, this whole charter school idea, we can, I think, in large part thank, who was it, Arnie Duncan, who was the Secretary of Education during Obama, for accelerating that trend towards charter schools. And now DeVos is going to try to put it on steroids, or, you know,
because
double it.
Like you said, it opens the door to taxpayer money going to private schools,
right, and it largely resegregates to the extent that
I was just going to ask a question. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
It seems to me that the charter schools, and mind you, I haven't looked this up yet, so you know, please correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like charter schools are only in cities and towns where it's black and brown, like to siphon away the taxpayer money from black and brown schools. I don't see this charter school thing happening in largely white areas. Am I wrong about that?
Oh, it is happening, believe me.
Oh, yeah, it happens.
Out here are mostly white schools.
I mean, you got McMansion school districts with rich white kids that are getting away from the poor whites.
Yeah.
The trailer.
All these high schools, is this Les that I'm talking with? All these schools that we're talking about, whether it's Duncan School up in Northern California, or whether or not it's the schools that Tracy, Cleveland, and Reseda, El Camino Real in Woodland Hills, Taft in Woodland Hills, Birmingham in Van Nuys, they're all in, they all were in kind of lily white suburbs.
Neighborhoods. Yes, yeah. especially Birmingham. Birmingham is in Encino, and it is definitely, you know, so, and see, with charter schools, they can pick and choose who they want to go there. You know, kids with special needs don't, you know, they don't have to allow kids, and also the kids, they have easier ways to not only to discriminate against kids, but the disciplinary, you know, they don't have the same rules and regulation when it comes to discipline and suspending students and expelling students. So it's like the same with hiring and firing teachers. They don't have the same rules as they do at LA Unified. So like Bob said, they can pick and choose who they want and keep out, you know, the riffraff, where, you know, i.e. black kids.
Yes, understanding what riffraff means in this particular context, yes.
And then students with special needs.
Here in California, you got your property tax base, too, that has a lot to do with it. Because all the rich people set up their own bedroom community out already. I watched this happen. I helped build these schools.
Mm.
They moved out of Redding to a place called Palisadro, became the McMansion Villa, and they built their own high school. It's really swanky. I helped build it.
Mm.
It's really swanky. And then the original high school of Redding, Shasta High School, and and Enterprise High School, they went radically downhill from there. Because all the tax base around where the school districts was started to become poor white trash, and the house, it was old housing, and it was falling apart. So all the only people that could live in it were the poor, lower class, middle class white people.
Well, I mean, I think this is emblematic.
You can see it. I mean, it's not black and white. And that's what I'm saying.
Well, I mean, it's economic. It's rich and poor.
It's rich and poor. It's economics.
The question, I guess I should have worded it better. It seemed to me like it was like poor black and brown areas, and then, yeah, or let's just say like low income areas that they started there, and of course greed is going to make them expand out to other areas. I was trying to figure out where this whole thing really started to take hold. Because wherever it goes, it's like the tax money away from everybody else, right?
Yeah, I think this whole movement started in Chicago.
Well, no, and let's not forget what happened in New Orleans with Katrina. We had a big expanse of charter schools opening up after Katrina in New Orleans.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's basically, you know, I think this is part of the dumbing down of America, and to basically, you know, instead of making education a public right, a right to those who are fortunate enough to be able to go to live in a good neighborhood so they can go to a good school. That, I think, is what the name of the game is, unfortunately.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, Rick and Sparky, let's not forget what happened to California schools after Prop 13.
Oh, yeah.
That's true.
Well, it goes back to Reagan's assault on higher education. Then you get Prop 13, and then you get charter schools, and, you know, here we are, and why are we in this basket, and right. Where are we going?
I'll tell you this. I'm glad I'm not a student today, and I'm proud to state for all to hear that I'm a graduate of the class of 72 of T.C. Williams High School in Alexandria, Virginia, depicted in the Denzel Washington 2000 film, Remember the Titans. So make of that what you will. That was... Of all my 3 years in high school, that was the best year ever.
Well, they tell me that in general, educational standards have gone downhill, but yet they have higher standards for students in high schools now. And in you know, I look at some of the curriculum patterns, and they look like that they're teaching the students more stuff in a lot faster amount of time. But I don't know if that's true or not.
Not civics, not political science.
Yeah, they're cutting out. Oh, hell no. They're also cutting out physical education, music programs, things that, you know, are necessary for our well-being, you know?
Yeah,
they've changed the curriculum.
The curriculum now, it's dumbing down is what it is. Because you need compliance if you're going to rule the country. Ignorance and compliance is what you need, and that's what it's all geared to. And don't
I'll
let
toast
anybody.
My victory, Jen, to that one, Scott. Right?
Just don't call it off.
George Carlin say the best. They don't want people that are smart and capable of critical thinking. They want people that are just smart enough to pull the levers and do the paperwork, and just dumb enough to accept the lot that is given to them.
Yeah. Bingo.
You're right.
Bingo.
There it is.
Yeah.
So, Bob, would you introduce me to Les, because I don't really know Les.
Les, this is Larry. Larry, this is Les.
Hi, Les. Hey, Larry. How are you? I'm Larry from Berkeley.
Where are you from, Les?
I'm Les from everywhere. I'm currently in New York. I just bought a house in Florida about 2 years ago, and I'm back and forth between the two.
Okay. Well, I'm Rick from L.A. I'm Billable Rick.
Yeah, that's Billable Rick. And Les, when you say New York, do you mean New York or do you mean New York State? And I'm going to get an email about that, too.
Long Island.
It's got to be the city, man.
Yeah.
No, Long Island. I'm about half hour, 40 minutes east of the city, depending on the traffic.
Not terrible. Hey, Clarity, I keep seeing you light up. What's up before we get out of here?
I was just going to say that the reason why Trump seems to keep going the way he's going is because his base. I got to hear an earful on the BBC Friday Roundup with their handpicked a board of experts on the U.S., and they actually called Dianne Feinstein a prominent prominent conservative has said there's nothing going on with the Russian investigation, so that should solve that.
Yeah, nothing to see here.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
She's
always been a conservative.
Well, I know, but she's asking some pretty tough questions on the Intelligence Committee, I mean, for her at least. Yeah, well, I think they're calling spade, maybe. But the other thing that yesterday on the CBC World Report, they interviewed some young Republicans from the University of North Dakota, and they were just saying, oh, it's just been win-win. You know, Syria and Afghanistan, he's just, you know, feeling his might, and the Democrats just need to get out of the way. This Comey thing was the best thing he's ever done, and if they don't get their act together, we're going to have a supermajority in the Senate.
Oh God!
Well, they might anyway.
God help us! Hey, gang, I hate to do this, but I've got to cut it short because we are right up again. Well, we're at the top of the hour. Thanks to everybody for joining in and participating. And I love Friday on the Front Porch. I'm glad we were able to get something going. Great big, humongous, super duper, gigantic, amazing thanks go out to Brother Deacon Asa for making this all possible. I will, depending on what happens with the White Rose server, I will keep notifying people via Facebook and Twitter. And let me just, it may take me a couple of minutes to get this out, but let me, you need to send me a note on Twitter or something saying, you know, just follow me on Twitter and, then do or do the same on Facebook, because that's the easiest way for me to get information out about the program. Okay, you don't have to participate, you don't have to do it. But that's where the messages come from. And on Facebook, you have to kind of prioritize me. Don't just follow. Put me on the list of what shows up first. That's not me being an egomaniac. That's just me making sure that you see the updates and things like that. So I will continue to update on the return of the White Rose server. If it's still not back on Monday, we will be using the good offices of Brother Deacon Ace's efforts at www.headon.live. Okay. That being said, thank you each and every one for sharing your precious finite time in this conversation. You make this incredibly special. And I thank you very, very much. Thank you to all of you who support the Horn with your kind contributions. May being what it has been so far, we're gonna keep pressing the fundraising just because everything got eaten up by car repairs, and there's bills that are queued up because they didn't get because of the car repairs. Because this ain't no multimillionaire broadcasting going on here. We're all just working people, or former working people. And you know, Mr. Soros still hasn't come through. Thank you to our all volunteer staff in the chat room. Thank you to Sparky, and he was ready to go on Wednesday. I just couldn't get it all together because the server was, as I noted, deader than Pharaoh's cat. Thank you to Steve from Georgistan for being ready to moderate on Wednesday. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. WhiteRoseSociety.org. Ben is working like a wild man trying to get White Rose back up. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And yes, always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody. See you on More In Monday.